essentially a lot of what this book, The Patterning Instinct, is about, that got published last year, looks exactly at this question of how culture actually shapes our values and how those values shape history. And that is not something that is kind of generally understood among historians or just in general. Those seem like sort of soft things, and actually history, isn't it shaped by, like, you know, who got there first to America, or like things like that. But something that I find so interesting, in fact, I began the book on just this this kind of story, if you will, is something that in my mind is iconic to show how different cultures actually have shaped history. So we're all very familiar with the fact that you know, in 1492, you know, Columbus sailed the ocean blue and discovered the New World, and that's the sort of moment in history that changed everything. What we're not so aware of is actually in that same century, a couple of generations earlier, there was this massive armada that set sail from China under an admiral called Admiral Zheng. And it was like 300 ships in this armada. And believe it or not, you could have fit 10 of any of Columbus's boats in one of this Admiral Zheng's armada. He had 27,000 men in this armada. And for 30 years, he basically owned the whole of the Indian Ocean. You know, he'd go to Sri Lanka, he'd go to Arabia, and East Africa, you name it. And when they would turn up in a port, sometimes they'd have more people in their armada than lived in the whole city. And so some people were so amazed by Zheng and his people, they actually deified him. There's even temples to actually worship Admiral Zheng, still existing in some places. So this is this key question. How come Admiral Zheng, who's sort of owned this whole area, we haven't even heard about in history, but Columbus, obviously, you know, every single person knows, kind of shaped history. And in my understanding, it's because of culture. Because when Zheng arrived at a place, he didn't think of exploiting. He didn't think of, like, what can we do to, like, take over and enslave the population. Instead, you know, he'd find the king, and he'd invite the king or one of the king's family back to China to kowtow to the emperor, all recognizing how great China was, but to basically establish trade routes. If there was piracy in an area, they'd clean it up. And they had incredible military power. But then, by contrast, when Columbus, with his three little boats, and one was so dilapidated, they had to, like, stop in the Canary Islands for repair after a few days. You know, he finally made it to the New World, and he'd actually land at an island, and he discovered people similar to the kind of people Jerome was talking about. And he would write in his journal, he was amazed by how ingenuous they are. You know, he'd say, you show you like something, they'll just give it to you as if you're like their family. And they're so naive, like, you show them a sword, they'll cut themselves because they have no idea how it even works. And right away, the journal moves to this other part where he goes, and he's actually writing these journals to the King and Queen of Spain, and he goes, well, with 50 men, we could enslave the entire population and bring them back to Spain. And so there was this way in which exploitation was a core underlying value in the West, and something very different in China. So just to give you a real quick sort of sense of the ways in which some of those developed, following up from where Jerome left off, I describe in some chapters very much like exactly the kind of hunter-gatherer culture Jerome was describing. And with agriculture, we developed these values that had never existed before in human society. We began to be sedentary. Suddenly, things we owned became really important. Whereas hunter-gatherers nomadic hunter-gatherers don't even want stuff because they're going to move on afterwards. And suddenly, inequalities developed because when people sow crops in fields, if somebody got a little luckier, worked a little harder, and they got more crops, and somebody else didn't, they don't want to just give that up to the other person. So they begin to set up fences and separations and then hire people who got unlucky. And so wealth itself becomes a value. in itself. And that leads to all these places of separation, which we see in every early agrarian civilization across the world. But then one of these kind of interesting points in this book is just looking around 2,500 years ago, something very interesting happened in the world. And you had two different civilizations that developed different paths of thinking. In the East, traditional China developed a sense of everything. They took this hunter-gatherer notion of connectivity that Jerome was talking about and developed a sophisticated understanding of nature as a harmonic web of life. And that's the kind of thoughts that Admiral Zheng had when he went out there. He didn't want to disrupt things because everything was interconnected. But in the West, beginning with the ancient Greeks and then reaching this whole different level with the scientific revolution, there was this sense of separations and a sense of humans as being separate from nature. And a lot of the values that actually we take for granted right now found their foundations in ancient Greece, but really got developed around the 17th century, around the time of the scientific revolution. And I think those are some of the values that, amazingly, you know, we live our lives based on 17th century philosophers' ideas of what the world was about, and we don't even take those, we don't even question those. And that's some of what I think we can maybe unwrap in the next.